We're going to flash a picture up here in just a moment of one of our couples from about the time that they were married. And you'll have about 7 seconds, or at least that's the plan, to identify that person. Feel free to talk out. You can already tell this service is loosening up by the minute here, and very informal. Now, this is one of those wonderful times when you're given full permission to talk in church, and so just feel free to do that, and this will be a whole lot of fun, we think, as these folks share their hearts. And I want to remind you, as they share their hearts about why and how their marriage has lasted for between 25 and upwards of years, and just listen to it. These folks have really something to share, but again, I probably need to say for our visitors that these folks don't make any claims to having perfect marriage or being perfect people at all. In fact, they could give you long lists of their shortcomings and would gladly do so. But they realize that God has kept these marriages together. And so, anyway, just listen for the nuggets of truth here. And I'm going to go over here and sit with my wife because I don't want her to be a church widow for tonight anyway. And so, anyway, I'm going to go over there and sit with her and be a good boy. All right, so you folks, just watch the screen. You'll see. Excuse me, Wanda. Excuse me. Who in the world is that?
Boy, that was about like, what, 43 years ago in June?
Going on 43 years.
Now, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. I'm not the best one to stand up and give anybody any advice or counseling. Our marriage has been up and it's been down. We divorced, we remarried, and we had a lot of hard times.
Amen, Jess, good.
Especially when we lost our baby. That was devastating. But God was there. Mm. I didn't see it at the time, but He was there. And throughout a good bit of our marriage, toward the beginning and during that, I prayed. I had a list of things like Chris did, but his pages were empty. Mine was filled with things about him that I prayed God would change. And the more I prayed that God would change him, the worse things got. I added more things to my list. And it seemed like nothing was happening. And I really, God tells you to pour out your heart to Him. And one night, I sincerely, honestly, with all my heart, poured my heart out to God. I can't do this anymore. I can't. I can't take another step. This marriage is going to be over again. Show me what's wrong. And that's when He gave me, if I can read it. Chapters Matthew 7 and 3. Why beholdest thou the mote that is in your brother's or your husband's eye? And consider not the beam that's in yours. And it smote my heart. And I realized that I was not being the wife to him that I needed to be. So I asked God to help me, show me what I needed to allow him to change, because I couldn't change anything. And I came across in the Bible in Psalms 119:29. It says that David prayed that God would remove from him the way of lying. Well, I start everything God showed me that was wrong with me, I started praying. God, remove from me having a critical and judgmental spirit toward my husband. Everything God showed me, and my list got a lot longer than the list I had for him, I guarantee you. God showed me, I asked him to remove this from me. And every time I ask him to remove that from me, I ask him, okay, Lord, replace it with your love. Help me to love him. You love him through me. Help me to love him that way. To replace it with your gentleness, Lord. Help me to be a gentle wife. Help me to be a kind and compassionate wife. And I just turn my heart over to, ask him to turn my heart over to my husband, turn my heart toward him. And I said, Lord, you know, the clay that I am, I'm asking you to take me and mold me and make me to be a helpmeet to him that would lift him up and that would compliment him and never tear him down. And I believe God has honored that. And I can tell you now what we have is sweeter than anything we've ever had before. And we sing a song in the church, it will be worth it all when we see Christ. Well, when you go through your struggles, don't give up. Don't try to change each other. Let God do that. And hold on to him. And I'm going to tell you, it gets so sweet. I wouldn't trade what we have. I wouldn't go back to the first days we were married for anything. Because it's so much sweeter. There's a lot more love and companionship. And I wouldn't trade it. And it is worth it all if you just hang on.
Like Janet said, we went through some rough times. And several things to give you advice, Cody, is do not keep any cast iron frying pans in the house till you get everything settled down. Yeah. Another thing is, know your rank in the household. You know, now God is going to be number one. God should always be number one. But then, you know, it's your wife after that, the two dogs, and then it's myself. I know my place in the house. And I know where I stand. But seriously, a marriage is not something that just happens overnight. It's not you go to the church one day, you get married, you know, and bam, you've got a marriage. Marriage is something you have to build. And if you're going to build anything, you've got to have a good solid foundation. Christ is a solid rock. Amen. You build your marriage upon Christ and upon the Bible, and it will last. If you don't, it will never last. We've got a plaque in our house now in the kitchen when you walk in the door that from the prophet Jeremiah says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And, you know, that's, since we got our marriage straightened out, that has been our motto.
God got our marriage.
Yeah, that's right. Since God got our, because we didn't do it, it would have been long gone, depending on the two of us. But God straightened it out by, when we turned everything over to him, trusted in him, and depended fully upon him, that's when everything smoothed out and started getting sweeter. Day by day. For a long time there, you know, we were not in church on a regular basis. Both of us were saved before we were married. But during my time in the military and traveling around, we had gotten out of church. When we moved back to this area, we did not get back in to a church family right away. And that's when our marriage, you know, was going on the rocks, you know, because we did not have the nourishment of a church family, the guidance of a church family to help keep us going. You know, even though we had both of our families and their advice, you know, you need your church family also. They are the ones that can admonish you, give you support when you need it, try to, you know, guide you in the right direction. Another thing that causes contention in a lot of marriages, that causes some contention in ours, is finances. And one thing I highly recommend, and Brother Tom, I think we need to have it in the church again, and that's the Financial Freedom Seminar by Jim Simons. That really helped us out. We already knew, you know, some of those principles, but going through those biblical principles on finance really, really helped us. And, you know, you've got to consider, it is, you know, it is not her money, it's not my money, it's God's money. God entrusts that money to us. And then it's ours together to use for whatever purpose that he deems we could use it for. But just, you know, put all of your faith and trust in God and let him guide you over these rough spots. Because if it had not been for God and for the love of Christ, we would never have made it through. But as Janet says, our marriage is sweeter now than it ever has been.
For you young people that don't know, that's a Nehru jacket. He wasn't the preacher, he was the husband. We got married on a Wednesday night, which was a story in itself. We actually were scheduled to get married in November. And we were going to have the ceremony, of course, at a church, which didn't happen for my first wedding. But that's another story. But anyway, we had our date set for the 2nd of November, and we got to talking towards the end of towards the end of September, I guess it was, and I said, "What are we waiting for?" We were ready. So I called our pastor, and he came, invited him and his wife to come and have dinner with us one day, and we decided we were going to elope that next Wednesday night before prayer meeting. So we did. We waited for our honeymoon until the 2nd of November after we'd had a reception. We went ahead in October and got married. We made commitments to one another before God, which were supposed to last until death parted us. With God's help, we managed to stay true to those vows. Brother Tom asked that we share one thing that helped us make this possible. There's no one thing. But for me, one of the things that was a hard one to learn was to have a forgiving heart. I had to learn to forgive and forget as God had forgiven me. That meant dealing with my pride, hurt feelings, sometimes anger, and frequently frustration. It got a little easier as we got a little bit older, but even in the last few weeks of our marriage, we still occasionally had to confess and say, "I'm sorry." Let me relay the last time that happened to us. It was a Tuesday evening, ladies' fellowship night. I fixed him some supper, and so he had something to eat, and off I went. We ladies shared good food, a great Bible study, and wonderful fellowship. On the way home, I was reviewing these things in my mind, thankful for the evening. I opened the back door, and this awful burnt odor hit me. Oh no, he's been cooking. He liked to have a fried egg sandwich as a snack in the evening, but he was not a cook. He thought everything needed to be cooked on high. Not only had he stunk up the house by burning the egg, but the burner on the stove was still on. He was in the bed. I marched to the bedroom, fussing up a storm. If you can't remember to turn the burner off, you shouldn't be trying to cook. I came back to the kitchen knowing I had a burnt pan to clean up, still fuming to myself. As I went over to the cupboard where we kept our medicines, this little green light caught my eye out of the corner of my left eye. The coffee pot light was still on. It had been on since that morning. Guess who left that on? Time to humble myself, retreat to the bedroom, and apologize. God always knows how to humble me. He'll humble you. Your pride will get in the way. You'll have to say, I'm sorry. And you better learn to forgive. You better learn that once you've said, I'm sorry, and I do forgive you, you don't bring it up again. Because that's one of the worst things in the world you can do. Love God. It's certainly we didn't have the best marriage. Geneva, I'm glad to hear you didn't have a perfect one. I thought you had a perfect marriage. All these years I've known you, I thought your marriage was perfect. Nobody has a perfect one. They're not there. I mean, we've heard a lot of them today, but none of them has been perfect. They get better as time goes on if you do what's right and follow the Lord. Thank you.
Okay. The key to 27 years and 3.5 months of marriage for me is God. His mercy and His grace. He takes us where we are and He grows us. And He's very patient because for some of us the process is slow. But the more that I've come to know Jesus, the more I've come to love Him, the more that I've come to understand the Christ life especially, the more I love my husband. And this year, God's done something beautiful in our marriage. And He's given us an appreciation and a love for each other that is deeper than anything we've ever had. And I'm blessed beyond measure. And I want to say publicly, thank you, Lord, for the 27 years, for the lessons learned. And I love my husband very much. Outside of God, he's the most important person in my world. And I never want to be without him. I love him always. And to the young ladies, I'd like to say, do it God's way. If you wait on him, you marry a believer, not just a believer, a growing believer. There's no need to wait 27 years to experience the blessings that God wants to give you.
Well, this is kind of an added blessing to have Shaughnessy and Cody sitting up here. I feel like Shaughnessy is one of our own kids. We've known her since she was a baby, and it's just precious what y'all are going to have because marriage is precious. Many people gave us advice before we got married. I think the one that really sticks out in my mind was from her rough as a cob granddad, W.O. Weatherly, when he said, the first sign of trouble, don't throw your hands up and just give up. And through the years, that's always stayed with me. Giving up just doesn't just necessarily mean leaving. Giving up can mean just saying, I'm not going to try anymore. And, you know, a lot of times I've done that. Just said, I don't even want to try. But, you know, something Ellen said this morning was good. She said, it's a choice. You make your marriage good by choosing to make it good. Remember that, guys. And we've always been honest with each other. Oh, my, we've been honest with each other.
Brutally honest.
I mean, this is, you know, I was thinking about how when you're dating or courting or whatever, you know, you put on the dog for each other. You look nice and you go to nice places and you're on your best behavior because you want to impress this person. But then you're living together, you're married, and, you know, you see them brush their teeth or take a Q-tip and go like this. And you're, in other words, you're familiar with this person. Now you're on an intimate level. And but you love them despite all that. And you grow together. And I tell you what, Jesus is a friend that sticks closer than a brother, but this is my best friend right here. And you don't always have to have the last word, Cody, because you are going to have disagreements like Owen Weatherly said. Troubles are going to come. You're going to have disagreements. You don't always have to have the last word. Well, one day, Jason and Allie were little. And we were having an argument. We were doing different stuff around the house, and we were in the kitchen arguing. See, you're going to have disagreements. Anyway, it was both of them. Because you were washing our little Pontiac Grand Am we had that my dad gave us. And
that's another time.
Yeah. Well, we were snapping, you know, doing what couples do in the kitchen, you know. So she goes out. She doesn't say another word and goes outside. Well, that just made me even madder. So I follow her outside, and she's out there washing the car, and I'm just, you know, giving her what for and telling her what the truth is, you know, saying, okay. And I felt so good about myself when I got the last word, and she just looked at me and just said, "Psh," with the garden hose. Unfortunately, that made me even madder, but.
I need a little cooling off.
Yeah, you don't always have to have the last word, but seriously, God has had his hand on our marriage. He really has. Even before, I found it remarkable, all the godly people that I saw speak this morning that weren't saved when they got married, and I was not saved. Susan was, but I was not. We were unequally yoked, and I was just an unsaved church member. When Jason was a baby, and this is the one she was thinking about, we had a real awful, and this is one of those bad fights you just cringe to think about, and well, things got so emotionally high that she grabbed Jason crying and mad and was headed out the door, and I thought, what have I done? And I was running after her out the door. She swings open the door, and there's Ricky and Andrew standing there getting ready to knock on the door. I don't have to tell you what would happen when somebody is in an emotional state and they get behind the wheel of a car with a baby. I feel God put them there right there to protect us and our child. And
the Southern hospitality kicked in. Come on in. Over. I had to go to the bedroom.
Yeah, but then she said, "You entertain them. I'm going to the bedroom."
That's
I said, right. "Okay." And it's like, that's just one of the many ways that God protected us over the years, and I'm just thankful for it. But I'm so thankful for our marriage, and I'm thankful for this woman who is wise and good with our kids, and just has that simple wisdom to help out. She truly is my helpmate.
I like Judy. I all week I was wondering what I could possibly say, but I think through our whole marriage I have battled an independent spirit, And as a Christian, that's just a war you can't win. And I think we've been married about 7 years, and Thomas gave me this plaque. And it says on it, the goal in marriage is not to think alike, but to think together. And we will never think alike. I'm just telling you. We have fought through the years, and really the two he gave you is probably the worst cases, and even now I can't tell you what we were fighting about either time. But just having to get that last word in. And I know my daddy, he didn't have any boys, so he raised two very independent, I mean, just strong-willed women. And that really has coming together in marriage, you really need to depend on each other and not be so self-sufficient. And I think one thing that helped us through the years is never having divorce as a back door. The year before we married, Thomas's parents had been married 32 years, and we watched their marriage fall apart. And I watched the damage in these grown kids from that. And we determined if we set our vows that we would stick to them. And another thing that I think that really helped us through the years is, even though we did have our fights, is we never ran home to pay our parents. We stuck it out, and we didn't go home and smear each other's name to our parents. We were able to, I mean, I knew it was going to be over eventually. And if I told my mother every time I was offended, she would hate him, you know, and she would not have the grace to forgive him. And so we, you know, we worked it out together. So, so June will be 27 years, and I love this man.
Well, this beautiful young lady has been my bride for 37 years, and it's been the greatest 37 years of my life. She knows me too well, and she knows that when I open my mouth, I don't know what's coming out. So she won't let me say anything. So I'm going to zip it up.
Reminds me of a quote from Elizabeth Elliot. She said, "Not everything needs to be said, and very little of it needs to be said by me." So I don't know if that's his frame of mind there or not. So, okay, everybody who knows me knows I have a list, and so here's the list. But it's not going to be too long and drawn out, I don't think. The verse that came to me was from Isaiah 32. It says, "My people will abide in a peaceful habitation, in secure dwellings, and in quiet resting places." And I think from what I've learned in life, men want a peaceful home. They don't care if there's a little bit of dust. They don't care if there's a little bit of clutter, but they want peace in the home. And I think that's a really important thing to remember, no matter what, how to get there. So how do we get there? Now, that was spoken to Israel, but I think that's God's will for all of our homes. So I have made a list here of things that we do or things that we try to do. As I read them off or tell them to you, it's going to sound like we think we have arrived at all these things. That's not necessarily true. But these are things that we have tried to do and establish on a daily basis. They're more practical than some of the things others have said, but maybe they will be helpful to you. I will say that, like everybody else, we've had a very hard 37 years. One time I wrote a letter to Elizabeth Elliot listing all these terrible things that had happened in my life, and there was a laundry list of every traumatic experience known to man. I heard it later read on her program, and I thought, oh, that poor woman. And it was only after she got to the end of it that I realized she was reading my letter, so... Anyway, I really felt sorry for her. I thought that was bad. Okay, of course, the most important thing is to be committed. And when we married, we were not believers. It was our second marriage, and we were determined that this would last. We were saved in 1976, so God alone is responsible for this marriage, and we are most grateful to him. So these are some of our goals. These are things that we do. These are practical things. Everybody's not going to do them or want to do them, but these are things that have helped us have a peaceful home. Simple thing, we have all our meals at the table. We sit down. We have a candle lit for every meal except breakfast. We have flowers on the table, or a flower from the yard, or a plant, or something like that. We try to be courteous and kind. That's been addressed before. Elizabeth Elliot has said, and everybody's tired of hearing me quote her, I'm sure, courtesy is small sacrifices, little ways of saying my life for yours. So we try to always be courteous and kind. We try to be careful with kidding. Sometimes that can mask complaints in ways that are hurtful. So you have to really be careful in kidding. We try to look the best for each other. Of course, as we get older, that takes longer and more effort. But we do try to look the best that we can for each other. With few exceptions, when one of us leaves the house or comes back to the house, the other is at the door. We wave goodbye until the car is gone, and when we hear them at the door, we get up and go to the door to give a greeting. We are lavish with authentic, sincere praise. It's got to be sincere, but there's plenty of that available for the people that we love. We are very physically affectionate. Lots of hugging and kissing, lots of hand-holding, and that's important. We limit television viewing. We have common interests. We are opposites. We don't have tons of common interests. I've tried to really work on football since I retired to work in that area. I'm not planning on going hunting. But I don't think he wants me to go hunting. So that would be a good thing. But then we give each other room to develop individual interest, and that's really important. Everybody has to have space. Everybody has their own way of doing things, their own interest. You've got to let people be who they are. Give them room to grow and be what they want to be and do in all their individual interest as well. We talk about finances a lot. Doesn't matter how much you have or how little you have. Everybody needs to know where you are, what page you are. And in a home, let the person who is a detail person take care of the details. It doesn't matter. Everybody has to understand the budget and all that sort of thing. But let the one who does the job the best or has the most interest in it, let them do that kind of detail work. We have guarded the exclusive relationship that we have. We have put fences around our marriage in our relationships with other people. That's definitely important. It doesn't matter the age that you are. Ladies, no nagging. Of course, I contend that that nagging is in the ear of the person hearing it. If he wants to hear it, it's a reminder. If he doesn't, it's nagging. But nevertheless, I have a reminder list, and I write things on this list. There have been some things on that list for months.
Some have been there a year.
Some have been there a year. But God willing, once I write it on the list, I try my very best never to mention it again. Eventually, it will get done. We laugh a lot together. We keep no secrets. We talk to each other. I think that's, you know, we have some children we say something to, and a month later or a week later or something, you'll mention it to the other one. They say, oh, I didn't know that. It's like, you know, don't y'all talk to each other, you know. You got to talk to each other. Let each other know what's going on in your lives. We have a night out at least weekly together. And we treat each other as adults. I am not his mother, and he is not my father. We have a devotional time each night when we pray with and for each other and for our church family and other family. We trust each other implicitly. We have been faithful to each other in our marriage. That is the only gift, the only real gift that I can give to my husband and that he can give to me. Other gifts can be duplicated, but that's the only unique gift that I can give to him. Two more things for the ladies. If you feel that your husband is wrong about a decision, say your piece and let it be. If he makes a mistake, he is responsible before God. It's not the end of the world. Life will go on. It is not worth causing difficulty to prove your point. He says that I'm the navigator, and so if we're lost, it's always my fault. But the example is, if a husband thinks, you turn this way and you think you turn the other way, what difference does it make? If you know you're right, let it be and let him go the wrong way. It does. He'll find out soon enough that he's gone the wrong way. But, it's just not worth the effort. Give up your right to be right. What difference does it make? The peace. There's a
is somebody recording this?
I think so.
Good.
There is a Jewish concept called Bet Shalom, and it is peace in the house. That is an overriding concept in the Jewish faith, peace in the home, and it is an important one. God has been over us. He has blessed us far more than we deserve. And as with these other couples, it is sweeter now than it's ever been before. I thought we were passionately in love when we married. I think Jim feels the same way. But it is sweeter and stronger and deeper and better every day.
Just to, let Brother Tom know that it originally was planned as a solo for me. But, with the theme of the music, I thought it better just include my whole family and for us to do it all together.
My piano player just said, don't let him have the microphone. Okay. This is just a hard act to follow. There's just been so many good testimonies today. And, we're not there yet in some of those places where some of these couples are. So we got another 20 or 30 years to work on that. So. But I also came from a broken home. So when we got married, I knew I wanted, it was commitment. And that I would not put my family through that. And so divorce was never an option for either of us. And he came from a stable home as well. So from the get-go, it was for life. And I don't know what's wrong with these other women, but I did marry the perfect man. And we were just blissfully in love for a long time. We were both in vet school and very busy and helped each other through and just did great. And I just madly in love with him. And we started serious spiritual growth about 2 to 3 years into our marriage. And with that spiritual growth came a lot of seminars and books and things where I was starting to learn about marriage and how to grow a marriage and what a wife should do and what a husband should do. So I began to make these lists, all kinds of lists in my head. Okay, this is what I need to do. This is what he needs to do. And in my mind, he wasn't doing his part. And so I started... Bernadine Cantrell gave a talk one time about the rose-colored glasses, how you usually have them on when you're dating and then take them off when you're married and you see the real picture. And it's supposed to be the opposite. You have the rose-colored glasses on after you get married so you don't see their faults. But I had mine off, and I was seeing every fault that he had. And I just had this list of expectations that I thought a husband should be and began to develop this picture of a perfect husband in my mind. Not any particular man that I knew, because all my friends had husbands with the same problems as mine. So it wasn't coveting anybody else's man. It was just wanting that perfect guy. And I sat him down one time after I had struggled for a long time, and I told him what my expectations were for him. And I said, okay, now tell me what your expectations are for me. And he said, nothing. I said, what? I mean, I know you expect me to have dinner home on the table when you come home and take care of the kids. And he said, no, I don't have any expectations of you. And that was a real eye-opener for me and a God thing for sure that he did. And I struggled for probably 20 years, and it was during our 20th year, and we had, I think, about our fourth or fifth miscarriage that year. I was going through a major emotional time. We were at an ATI conference and heard Jim Logan on spiritual warfare. And I just came to a crisis point, and I finally realized that I was not going to change him. And I could not expect him to change into that perfect person that I had thought that I married. And once I gave that all to God, gave all my expectations to him, then from that point forward, it's, in my life, it's just been much more peace and much more of a respect and a love for him since that time. And so we're 34 years this June, and just rejoice in what God has done. And we gave our family to the Lord from the beginning, and just praise him. And I just can thank this man for the way these children have turned out because of his dedication, his talk about steadfast marriage. He's the most steadfast man that I know and faithful.
No, I didn't write that. No, I guess a lot of things, I guess, repeated over and over again is talking about the foundation of marriage. And going back, you know, Christ is the foundation. You know, let him be the foundation because he's that strong rock that we can rest upon. Yeah, I guess back, how many of you know where Godfrey, Georgia is? A few. Down there below Madison, between Madison and Eatonton, that area there. But I guess at that time, got married. Debbie's parents living down at the experiment station Eatonton. That was the church. They went to Godfrey Methodist Church. And I guess it was one Saturday we went, you know, I guess the pastor of that church, special. We had, I guess the person who gave the vows was a former pastor, Methodist pastor that they had in Mississippi, who was now Methodist evangelist, Cecil Williamson. But the pastor of the church there, as the Methodists do, I guess he had several churches, sort of a circuit there he had. But he was in, I guess, the Methodist seminary down there. And one of the, you know, here, as far as the way we looked at marriage, you know, in discussion, I guess you could say it was, I don't know if it was counseling or whatever, but we came to talk about it because coming from the perspective of marriage, relationship, husband, wife, from Ephesians 5. And coming from, you know, this pastor with all the liberal instructors in seminary, you know, you get to the verse 22 of chapter 5, wives, submit yourselves unto your husbands as unto the Lord. And he couldn't fathom that, you know, which is unfortunate. And that's, we had, I guess, a section of Ephesians 5 as part of our marriage ceremony. But what I want to really speak on is verse 25 of this chapter. Husbands, you know, talking to me, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. And you think what Christ did for the church. He gave all. You know, we're not perfect. We do a lot that hurts him. But still, he loves us. Doesn't matter what. And Cody gives charge to you. You know, let's think less of ourselves and think more of our wives. It's difficult dying to self every day because, you know, you know, we're here, you know, we love ourselves, want to do what we think is best in our interest and tend to ignore those closest to us. And it's a daily struggle to make sure we're trying to put them first ahead of us, think of their interests, think of their needs. Now, you're not perfect in doing it, but rely upon Jesus, rely upon God to his Spirit to enable you to do it. And as far as one of the things, I guess the picture's not up there, but the previous one there, one of the things, you know, you sort of adopt your future spouse's children. that little pointy nose child up there. Got to live with me, I guess, about 6 months before we got married. I called her Weasel. Her real name was Sissy, you know, but anyhow, we'll pass this one and let somebody else entertain you, give you counsel.
Well, to start with, I was about 30 years old when we got married, just turned 30. And up until that time, I was 23 when I first left home. So between that time we got married, I'd had a lot of time to build bad habits into my life and things like that. So after we got married, that we had some stressful things to come in to our life. I'd say probably right off from the start there, we'd only been married about 4 months, and we started to build a house on our own, in our own contracting. And that was the first one of two others we built along the time there too, most of it ourselves. And right after I wasn't saved when we got married. It was about probably a year after that, after we were married, and about 4 months after Josh was born, that we started the church. And I got saved, and then we committed ourselves to the marriage. We committed that there would be no divorce, so we didn't want to discuss divorce. So we committed ourselves to that. And during that time, of course, when I was 30, I'd had 7 years of living on my own, and just the only person I had to please was myself. So I had a lot of things to learn, and still do, in the marriage. I developed a lot of blind spots, and things like that. And after we married, I had to learn to swallow my pride and ask forgiveness a lot of times. And I can see now that I'm still learning this, that I'm not as sensitive to Karen's needs as I should be. And that's something I've been learning along the way, too, and hadn't perfected yet. But I've also found out that when the women need to be reassured, they're in control. And a lot of times when things go wrong, they just want us to reassure them that things are going to be okay. And so many times I try to do things in my own strength when I should be depending on the Lord to do it. And I think that's what they want to hear from us, is we're not trying to do things on our own, but we're going to depend on the Lord to see us through it. And we also have that promise that He'll never leave us nor forsake us. We just need to keep that in our minds. And a lot of times that I found that when we do have problems and things, it's a lot of it's because I put my responsibilities off on Karen instead of taking care of myself. So that's another thing I'm still learning after 30 years and working on. But I am thankful for a godly wife.
First of all, I'd like to say that and I've really appreciated the testimonies, and just to see how God has worked so mightily in each and every one of our lives. It's encouraging to know that we're, you know, kind of average, and, you know, we're just right there with all of y'all, because there's been the ups and the downs. I will say, Danny said that he was saved when we got married. I knew better than to marry an unbeliever because I was saved. And someone had talked with him, and he thought that he was saved. And then when we started going to church, and he realized that he was not. So that would be one of the main things that I would tell the young people, is not just to marry somebody that says they're Christian, but look at what they're doing. You know, are they serving the Lord? Are they faithful in church? You know, how about reading their Bible, praying? You know, because we can be a Christian in name only. And, you know, you can imagine with Danny not being saved and me thinking that he was saved, how differently it could have turned out, because I was raised in a very fundamental church, and I wanted a Christian home. And I had Matt then. You know, this was my second marriage. And if you ever have any doubts as far as the hurtfulness of that, there are those scars. You know, God does forgive, but there are scars there. And Matt's always been very gracious about that. But you know, you can tell Danny's a humble person. He's Mr. Steady. You know, he really is more, I tell everybody, he's kind of like a flat line. He's an even keel, and he's not a very emotional person. And so my emotions can kind of go all over the place. So, you know, that's something that, you know, has been, it's a struggle sometimes, I think, as a woman, because, you know, we see the way that we need to handle it, but then we kind of get into the emotional aspect of it. And I think the biggest thing is that early on in our marriage, we did get in church, and, you know, God just has always had us under really good teaching. And, you know, he sent the kids the stresses. We had three houses that we did build a lot by ourselves, or contracted out or did a lot of the physical work. We had three children that were born with problems that put stress on us, and there were some financial stresses from that. You know, I mean, all of those, any one of those things can send you down. But, you know, we do attribute God holding us and keeping us. And then the biggest thing I think now in our marriage is there's a sweetness. And, you know, before we did look to God and we wanted to follow his principles and we prayed and we trusted him. But really to find out, you know, when, the way that God geared, well, the way that I was raised and my circumstance has called me to be like a hyper-perfectionist. You know, I want to do everything well. And but actually, at this point in my life and in our marriage, we've given up on having the perfect marriage. And, you know, given up on being the perfect person, the perfect, you know, parents, grandparents, whatever, because we can't do it. You know, you just put yourself on a treadmill when you think that that you can ever do that in and of yourself. And to learn that Christ is our life, that we have no confidence, we put no confidence in the flesh anymore. And the sweetness is that, you know, we can hate our failure, our sin, but yet together we understand that Christ is the one that has the answer. And so our failures don't get us down, but yet we look to him, to trust him. And, you know, it just gets sweeter. You know, I love having a history with Danny. I mean, 30 years, over 30 years. And, you know, young love is wonderful, but, you know, the 30 years, it's love that's been tried. And, you know, it's true. You know, it's a true love because it's an enduring love. And that is, you know, it's a very special and wonderful thing. And we just feel very blessed. We feel very blessed with our family. It's not anything that we ever did, but that God has just blessed us beyond more than we could have ever asked or thought. And thank you.
I wasn't going to say much of anything because I said, well, Bill, you enjoy talking, and I was going to give it to him. But I thought of a couple of things that I wanted to say. As you can see, we were old when we got married. Actually, we were older. We were 32 and 37. And we met at Athens Christian. And we both had come to the point in our lives where we had given marriage to the Lord as far as leading anybody into our lives. And so that's how that came about. And the one thing that I have really appreciated about Bill is that there were no surprises even after we got married. We dated for, well, we knew each other for 3 years, but we had dated for two of those. And he was totally unselfish and not possessive in any way. I was free to be myself, and, you know, and hopefully the same for him. And we've enjoyed many, many things together. We enjoy traveling together. We enjoy biking together and in the woods together and, you know, a lot of things together. And in our later years here, we've also enjoyed going off to the wilds and just kind of as a celebration of our marriage and enjoying the truths that we continue to learn even from the speakers there. And one thing that was said at the last WILD conference last year, the speaker said that when he's counseling couples, he says, what does it take for the Lord, for God, to leave you? What would you have to do for God to leave you? And they say, nothing. Nothing can separate us from his love. And then he looks at each one and he says, what would it take? What would they have to do for you to leave them? And that has really been a great truth. And that really is the essence of commitment, you know, that there's not anything. And so as it has been already said, the years do grow sweeter as we get older and you learn more about each other and do a lot of things together.
I had just a note or two here because I know Brother Tom would attest to the fact that I can be too stretched out. So I did have a number one here, but I moved another one into that place after this past Wednesday night in the prayer because the Lord gave me something that came out of my mouth and it sort of surprised me. And those are the jewels, the things that He gives you. And it was, Lord, open my mouth and close my mouth. Wait for God to open my mouth and then to depend on God to close my mouth and really mean that and not rattle on. And then Betty mentioned that I was 34 when we met, about 34 and a half, and I was almost 38 when we got married in December, and in January I turned 38. So I came to ACS. I went to ACS as a confirmed bachelor. I had told my folks, Dad and Mom, don't worry about me. I'm over the hill. I'm going to stay home, take care of you in your old age. I'm not ever going to get married. But I didn't realize what I had done. I really didn't realize what I'd done. Because looking back on it later, I realized that God was there saying, okay now. I can bring her into your life. I'd only seriously dated two girls in my entire life, and those were not, when I say serious, in quotes, not really seriously, and just those two. And then when I did that, when I made that commitment to myself and just really said to the Lord, don't bother anymore. I'm going to be a bachelor. I laid it on the altar. It was as if I took my aspirations for finding the right one and laid it on the altar and said, Lord, it's in your hands. I didn't realize that's what I was doing, but the Lord did. And when that happened, then there was Betty. I went down for pre-planning at Athens Christian School, and there she sat across the room. I still didn't know. About a year later, I was beginning to get, well, you know, so a slow thing there. Then, so that I don't rattle on, let me see here. Then after, when we were dating, and during those 2 years that we were really dating, and sometime, I guess, just prior to my asking her to marry me, we were looking through our picture albums. And I was looking at a picture of Betty, her childhood picture, standing out in front of the barn in Pennsylvania. And something hit me right then because that took me all the way back to my childhood. And I knew by that childhood picture that she was the one. That's a strange thing. But it was like I went back to when I was a child and I realized that this is the one that God was preparing for me way up in Pennsylvania and New York State. And it just hit me. And I knew then, from that moment on, I knew that she was the one just by that picture because something about her took me back to that time of the purity of childhood when you don't have all these encumbrance. And I realized from a long ago memory. And then the next thing I wanted to say, you know, in the marriage vow, and I just heard the same thing, was it yesterday at the marriage? Was that yesterday, the wedding? One thing about getting old, you lose track of time, you know. But yesterday at the marriage ceremony, for Jonathan and Joy, I heard these words, what God has brought together, let no man put asunder. And it made me remember something else, too. You know, it takes three to make a marriage. And I heard that along the way, too, just recently, that reinforced this. In God's math, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, 1 + 1 = 1. And in the marriage, what God has brought together and becomes one flesh in God, 1 + 1 = 1. In other words, for us, it's Jesus Christ. And that is the bond that holds us together. 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. And that big one, of course, is Jesus Christ. And on both ends of that little line. Then, this is sort of funny to me because I'm still in the middle of it. I've just started on discovering the mind of a woman. I'd recommend this to you because so far what I'm discovering is the mind of a man. But so I think you'll get to the woman eventually, I hope. But I'm discovering, when I mentioned this, I got it back there because I knew Betty would want me to read this book. And so I got it, and I took it home, and it was laying around, and I was reading my other stuff, and it was laying around. And so finally I asked Betty, she asked me, have you started the book yet? Have you started the book yet? She had asked me. And I said, well, I think I already know the mind of a woman. And Betty said,
I don't think so.
She gave me the look of an eighth grade teacher talking to an eighth grader. And so I knew I'd better read the book. And sure enough, as I started reading it, and I'd recommend this to every man, when I started reading Ken Nair's book that Dr. Van Gelderen left with us, one of the books, then I began to realize, you know, on every page, several times on every page, I discovered things about myself. Things that Ken Nair was sharing about me. And I didn't know it. I didn't really know it, and certainly not that way. So, discovering the mind of a woman is like this other book that I'm into. I'm going back and forth between these books because I like to read in segments. This one, Starlight and Time, Solving the Puzzle of Distant Starlight in a Young Universe. Well, this one's more complicated. That's more complicated. You notice it's thicker? It's more complicated, believe me. So, anyhow. And then... Then... one of the things that comes to mind, too, that I would say to Cody is, I had to write this down because it gets a little twisted around, but get used to this because probably Adam and Eve, before the fall, probably the first thing that she said to him after she was created was, have you thought about moving that to there and that over here, you know? Women like change. And so get used to the fact that you cannot get used to the things like you used to get used to them. Best way I know to put it. And then the last one. The last one is it's really a little bit like this. I don't know how far to go with this. Not very far. Okay. There was a little boy who was out in his yard, and he saw a collie dog, first collie dog he ever saw, bushy collie dog. He ran in the house and said, Daddy, 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 there's a lion in the yard. And his daddy said, I've told you over and over again not to be telling these stories like that. You know there's not a lion in the yard. You go up to your room, and I'll come up in a little bit. You pray to the Lord about it. Pray to the Lord about these tales you tell. And he got up there, and meanwhile, the father went and looked, and sure enough, there was a bushy collie dog in the yard. So he went up to see what his little boy had decided. And the little boy, he thought maybe, oh boy, okay, this is the out. It really looks like he's ready to forgive him, you know. The little boy, he said, what did the Lord say to you? And he said, well, the Lord said that he thought it was a lion first time he saw it, too. And it's almost as if the man is going to pray to the Lord and say, Lord, what is she all about? And the Lord might say, when I figure it out, I'll let you know. Not really that way. Okay. I wanted to lend it on a little bit of humor. But anyhow, the thing of marriage is, like it's been said so well by so many other people, I have to let Betty be Betty, and she has to let me be me. But I find, Cody, that when the changes are needed, it's usually me who needs to change, really and honestly. She'll give me kind and unobtrusive advice. And I'll have to think about it a while. But after I think about it a while, maybe a day later or 2 weeks later or whatever it is, I realize she was right. So much of the time that is the case. And I love her dearly, and we've enjoyed our marriage. It's not been perfect by no means, no stretch of the imagination at all. But we do enjoy one another, and we have fun, and we love one another.
Well, I hope mine's going to be short because my voice is going. But I want to say, first of all, that we have had a wonderful life. This August, it'll be 39 years, and it's been about 40 years ago that I first met him, and the Lord's work brought us together, and we've been in the Lord's work ever since. And that in itself and marriage has been a challenge with both of them together. But the Lord has been so good. And I had one of those lists, too, you know, this ubiquitous list that everyone has. And the first thing on my list was just stability and security. And because I did not come from a stable home, my parents, their relationship was unstable, and both of them had been married before they were married to each other. And just all the things that swirled around that just made me desire for security, and he's given me that for sure. But the missionary Ruth Paxson, she was a veteran missionary to China, and one time she was going with some young women going for the first time to the mission field on board ship, and she was supposed to speak with them, and she got up there and she said, "Young ladies, when you get to the mission field, the scum of your nature will rise to the top. And when you get on the other side of that marriage license, the scum of your nature will rise to the top. And everything, you know, you'll be revealed for what you are." And but the Lord has been so gracious to me. I had so much to learn. I did not have a good example to follow. All I had was my list that this is what I want. And the first thing, of course, was to serve the Lord. And and to give me someone who loved the Lord with all of his heart, and he did that, and security. But then my list just continued to grow. But and also the list of expectations of him, and then also my list of my rights. You know, we have that too. But the Lord has shown me down through the years, I have one right, and that was the right to go to hell. And that's all. Mm. And he spared me from that. But anyway, I'm sorry. But I guess the short version of this, Shaughnessy, I'll speak to you, but is to take that list, if you've already got one, to take it to Calvary and just crucify yourself to it, like Jesus did. And then if you're really wise, you'll do it every day for the rest of your life. And realize that the little pet pleasures that you win of being right or winning an argument or whatever, they're pretty hollow. And my advice to both of you is to be the first one to the cross.
Bonnie cries a lot. It has something to do with being married to me, I think. But, oh, me. You know, when you marry, you have a lot to learn about that person that you marry. But what you find out quickly is you have more to learn about yourself, because all that scum that she talked about does come to the surface. And I think I was probably one of the most deluded men who ever got married, because I really believed I had a Bible degree in my hand, which meant that I not only knew all about life just by my wisdom, but I also knew all about life from the Bible. I mean, I had a Bible degree. And I thought, you know, this marriage thing for us is going to be smooth sailing, because we just, we're already there. We're in the Lord's service, and we're going to serve God and have bliss at home. And but, you know, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And you learn so much about yourself. When we were picking out our pictures for this thing, we came closest to having an argument that we've come in years and years. And the reason was just the choice of the pictures. And I picked them out first, and she said, "I don't like that picture," talking about one in particular. And I said, "I love that picture. Why don't you like that picture?" She said, "I've never liked that picture." I thought, "It's a great picture. It's a picture of me." And so I love that picture. And so anyway, it's the picture up there on the left-hand side at the top. And it all began to you ever just have a moment of real revelation about yourself? I looked at that picture for the first time really with an open heart and open mind. And it is the picture of a man who is full of himself. Just full of himself. And that's kind of a blow when you first realize that you are full of yourself. But unfortunately, that wasn't the first time I realized I was full of myself. It was just kind of the final nail in the coffin there. Years ago, when we married, I have to say that I was deeply in love. But unfortunately, the person that I was in love with was me. And Bonnie was just I knew that God had sent her along, but I thought God had sent her along just to fulfill me and make me happy. And I was fascinated with her. She was beautiful. She was smart. She was spiritual. And I was fascinated with her. But I see now what I would have denied then to the death, was that I was full of myself and it was all about me. But one day the Lord used an incident to wake me up. We were, I've forgotten how many years into our marriage, but our children were still small. And Bonnie had slipped around. Leather coats were really the thing back in the 70s. And all the men wore a leather coat. All the women wore a leather coat. And I wore a leather coat. And so we were poor. We were working our first ministry. And anyway, what I didn't know was that Bonnie was skimping and saving and not buying anything for herself for probably a year. And she had saved up what at that time was just a gob of money. It was about $125, $150.
and she had slipped around and bought me a leather coat. Well, you buy me or Bill a leather coat, and it's got to be super extra long, and it's got to be, it's very expensive. And $150 then would have been $700, $800, I guess, now. And so she slipped around and bought me that coat, and on my birthday presented it to me. Well, I looked at it, and thinking like a man who's full of himself, I thought, well, you know, that just wasn't exactly what I wanted. I wanted a different type coat. And so when I looked at it, she picked it up. She was at that moment where she was about to say, do you like it? And then she read my face, and she could tell that I didn't like it. And so, now to me, men, you'll understand this. To me, it was very simple. She had put all that money into it, and so the logical thing to do was to take it back and get what I wanted, right? I mean, that was just the logical thing to do. And so, but men, the first thing you find out is that that lady, she doesn't think like that, does she? And I watched my wife dissolve into tears in the bedroom. And it wasn't the tears of a woman who wants her way. But instead, it was the tears. Have you ever seen a child who is just has his feelings absolutely crushed and they dissolve into tears? It was those kind of tears. And suddenly, as I watched my wife, and I didn't know what to do. I'd never seen her like that. And as I saw my whole selfish life, my whole full of myself life went in front of my, passed in front of my eyes, and I saw what I'd done. That I had taken this little flower that God had given me, and I had kind of crushed it. I don't know, it was just a moment in my life, and God rattled my cage at that moment. And I remember just pleading with her and begging her and talking to her. And I remember I drew something. I don't draw, but I drew a coat out of brown. It was a brown leather coat. I drew that brown leather coat. And I cut it out with scissors, and I stuck it on my mirror. And I left that brown leather coat on, picked that brown leather coat on my mirror for years and years, so that every time I was tempted to retreat to that guy that you see up there who's so full of himself, every time my sin nature was taking me back there, I'd remember what I'd done to my sweet wife and how I'd damaged our marriage and damaged our love between each other. And I looked at that picture, and that has been a watershed moment in our marriage, because if I had any counsel to give to the young people who are anticipating marriage, I would tell them to love that other person and show you love them by, number one, finding out what they like and doing it. Number two, finding out what hurts them and never doing it. And never doing it. And number three, instead of living for yourself, live for them, and you cannot do it. Because the Holy Spirit has to do that. We are selfish to the core by nature. We're full of ourselves to the core by nature. That's the way we come in the package. And that's the way we will be until Jesus Christ comes in and changes us. And so that's my account. It's named short, but it's good. By the way, since I've just been long, let me tell you, we've got a shower tonight, and we want to get to that as quickly as we can here. Don't want to cut anybody short. Help us, but just try your best to be brief about it.
We never would have been married today if we both knew the Lord, but we had kind of got away from him. Our going to church and all, but we got married and we decided that we were going to make it work. He was my second marriage, and this was his first marriage, and he was like you. We were old.
I almost escaped it. I was 38.
So, anyway, we got started into Bible study with anybody that we could. We went to financial Bible studies so we'd know how not to fight over what money we didn't have. And we went to marriage Bible studies at Kay Arthur. Some of you have heard of her. And any Bible study that you can go to tell you how to live together by the Bible, how Jesus meant for you to. And we've had fun through it. We've had problems. We've had troubles. But turn it over to the Lord. We don't carry a grudge. I don't. I say what I've got to say, and then I let it go. And I'm the one that probably worries him. I could be a nagger, I guess. Because I tell him over and over what he needs to do, and he just ignores me. He does what he wants to do.
By the way, is my hair sticking up in the back? I'm going to be a deadhead.
That's one of the things I keep telling him about. He gets in his lounge chair. And okay.
Well, it's true, and I'm so glad to hear that I haven't heard of any perfect marriages, and I don't really believe there is such a thing, because everyone's going to have problems. I mean, you know, you go into marriage, and, you know, at first it's all la-di-da, love and everything like that, but you have to work at a marriage. And, you know, you come into a marriage, you're two different personalities, and we're both real independent. And what she says, I might disagree with, and what I say, she might disagree with, you know. But and we've had our skirmishes, you know, just like everyone else. And but I think I've learned too to, you know, to sort of, there has to be a hero. Not that I'm always the hero. Don't get me wrong. But you know, when I see that she's going to be the last one standing, you know, in a skirmish, she'll stand toe to toe with you. So I just sometimes have to walk away and say, okay, you won that one, you know, and just go on about my business, you know, and maybe simmer for a while, and then I get over it. But really, you have to turn these things over to the Lord, you know. The Christ has to be the center of your life and help you through these things. And I'm constantly praying for her. And I know she prays for me, so that's just the way it is. But you know, all in all, we've had a very happy marriage, and I'm just glad that the Lord brought her into my life, because I might have been a bachelor also, you know, had it not been for her. But anyway, that would be my advice: is just remember that things are not always going to go smooth. You know, you're going to have some rough times, but you know, forgiveness and love, and keep Christ at the center of your life. Like, you'll be fine.
And I give all the credit to God.
No, I do.
For us being together. Thank you.
Yes, that is hair.
Okay. I came from a broken home also, and because of that, I said I would never get a divorce. But you know, you don't have to just have it on paper to be divorced. You can still be two people living under the same roof, but not living as a married couple. And we basically were divorced pretty much from about year two after we were married. But then, praise the Lord, by the grace of God, I ended up getting saved when I was close to being 30. And so then I really started trying to realize that I was really divorced in a way, and so started trying to change that. But one of the main things I have learned over the years is that I was a very rebellious teenager. I never learned to submit unto my authority. And so therefore, I took that into my marriage. I never heard the word submission. I had no idea I was supposed to submit to anyone. What's more, him. Why would I submit to him? He didn't know what he was doing either, you know. why would I do what he said? And at the time when I was lost, I was a very liberal thinker. I was pretty much a women's lib type person. I thought everything was supposed to be 50-50. He did his share of the housework, child care, everything like me. I was pretty much boss, and he let me be boss. And I was happy with that situation. I don't know if he was, but I was good with that. And then But after I got saved, we started coming to church here. And the picture, the reason that the picture of Susan and Thomas and their children and at the time, just Jason, Allie, and me and Ricky and Shanti's up there is because that was, after getting saved, that meant that was very significant. That's why that picture's up there. And if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't be here today, because the only reason I ever set foot in that door was to see Susan and Thomas get baptized. I was late, of course. I missed the baptism, but I heard the sermon. I heard the sermon, and I really needed to hear it. What? Yeah, I really needed to hear it. Anyway, but after we started going to church here, and then we went to Bill Gothard, I learned about submission. And I still struggle with that today, but I just want to give a charge to all the young people, male or female. You have to learn to submit into your authority at a young age, because if you don't, it will carry into your marriage and it will cause all kinds of problems for both male and female. For the female, if she can't submit to her husband, for the male, if he can't submit into his authority, whoever it is, and the ultimate authority is God, then things are never going to be as they could be and right. And then another thing I have really learned is I'm a control freak. I always have been. God has really convicted me on this several times. I always tried to control myself, my situations, him, you know, and you cannot control it. The only thing I can control is self-control, and that's the one thing I don't do. You know, the one thing I can do, I don't do. I lose my temper, angry. Anyway, just give it all to God. Let him control your life, because he's the only one that can control anything in a way. We can't control anything. We can control nothing. But just trust him to control it and let him control it always, everything.
There's, y'all have seen me stand here 1,000 times with 1,000 jokes. But tonight's a night to be serious. I've heard a lot of couples stand here and say, you know, I met my wife. It was a big spiritual situation. It was all. I met my wife, and I, from the get-go, it was her looks. My wife was beautiful. She was beautiful when I met her. She's beautiful today. I don't express that enough. If I could give one piece of advice, it would be love your wife, but let her know. The years that we've gone through, and you see those pictures, I'm twice the man I was then. It has absolutely nothing to do with spirituality. But my wife has been there for me. There have been lots of times that we wanted to just throw in the towel and say, that's it. But God brought us through it. It wasn't us. Because if it had been left to us, we'd have been gone a long time ago. Cody, if there's one thing I could tell you to take into your marriage is honesty. Just be honest with her. Never keep something inside of you that you'd be ashamed for her to know. If you'll do that, trust me, because she's just like her mama. You'll have a good marriage. Anybody would.
It's going to be a little bit difficult, so have patience. We're supposed to be celebrating enduring love. And I don't feel like I have a whole lot to celebrate. Even though Charles and I have been married for 27 years,
For the past 5 of those years, we've been separated. Sorry. I feel like I should be the example of what not to do when you're starting out in a marriage. For those of you who don't know, I was 16 and pregnant. Charles was 19. We did it our way, not God's. But I don't think that's what God wants me to... I don't think that's what he wants me to talk to y'all about tonight. Well, I think he wants me to talk to you about holding on for dear life in the situation that I'm in. Even when you don't want to. And there's times in the beginning of this I didn't want to, and I still don't. I still have my moments where I want to say, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. But thank God he is faithful. He reminds me that obedience brings peace. And he's not going to let me quit. Even when it makes absolutely no sense at all why I keep holding on. Especially when everyone around me, family, church family, think I'm crazy for some of the decisions I've made. I have good reason for a divorce. I have biblical reasons for divorce. But I've always wondered, would that bring me the peace of God? And I know it wouldn't. So I make it a choice every day. I choose every single day to obey what God tells me to do and to follow his plan, not mine, even when it makes no sense. God brings to my mind Romans 8:26. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. Even the things that don't make any sense at all are for good. My hope is that if, by grace of God, one day my marriage is restored, that the young people in this church don't look at us and say, well, it worked out for them. It's all good. You know, that's what matters. It worked out in the end. Because that's not what matters. Because I will carry, and worse than that, my children and my family, even my church family, will carry the scars of this for the rest of our lives. And they're not going to go away. They'll be there forever. Sorry. Talk with my hands like Lori. I beg you, young people, don't do it your way. Just don't. I'm going to give you a little bit of advice. This tiny bit. And you can blame Angela for me writing this down. I told it to her and she says, that's good, write it down. Marriage is hard enough when you do it God's way. Don't do it your way. You'll just mess it up. Wait for God's choice of mate. And wait especially for God's timing. Just take your time and wait. Thank you.
You are those people. I would like to begin by saying it is a wonderful life. But don't wait until you're ready to jump off the bridge to realize it. And if you don't understand that, watch the movie. Sorry. But it is a wonderful life. Doug and I are opposites, but we do agree on the majors. And even if you do agree on lots and lots of things, you're going to find some areas that you do not agree on. Looking around at these 30-plus couples, each one of them is unique. Each marriage is unique, and each person within that marriage is unique. And we're all asked for 3 minutes of counsel, a nugget, some kind of godly advice. It's like asking me right before I die, do I have any final words? And 37 years down the road, may God bring this day back to you, and you will say, I know what they meant. There is no way to share everything. But every person sitting under the sound of this great cloud of witnesses can never say, no one ever told me, no one warned me, and no one encouraged me in my decision. We are all witnesses of God's grace, but more than that, to His glory. It's not what I did right. It's not what Doug did right. It's what God did through us, two very imperfect people. And it's not about me, and it's not about Doug. It's about the enabler. And that's what every marriage here is. It's about the enabler. You need to realize, as wonderful and happy as things are now, the storms are going to come. The storms are different for each marriage here. It's been a different storm. Some of us have shared the same storms, and some of us will share other same storms before this life is over. But our storms are all different, and at different times. But you have to believe the Bible that a storm's good for you. It shows you where you're weak, and it can also make you stronger. You can join together as a couple during those times and not push each other away. Another thing you need to realize is that you've got an enemy, Shaughnessy, and he ain't your husband. It is the devil. And he is to destroy our lives and to destroy our marriages. And that is his goal, because the marriage is the picture of Christ in the church. Not telling you all this to scare you, but God would not have you to be ignorant. There will be times that it will seem that it is easier to walk away. But the question that you have to remember is, it's not what's easiest. It's how will this decision affect eternity. If we had made our decision based on the fact that this is too hard, and I think every couple in here would say, yes, there was a time that I would have said, this is too hard, that we would have walked away with less than 10 years of marriage and only one son. But by God's grace, He has given us 5 sons, and we thank Him for that. After the honeymoon is over, you'll look in the mirror one day and you'll realize that just how full you are. You're full of yourself. But you need to see every day as a chance to die. in the words of Amy Carmichael, seeing a chance to die to self, to what Cody wants, to what Shaughnessy wants. God will bring you to a place when your marriage is based on you and how cool you are and how nice you look. And your proud husband or whatever, it's different for everybody. Whatever it is, God will bring you to a place and he will show you you. And when you look and you see you, it's not pretty. Because if you ask God, he will show you you through his eyes. And you will see just how full of self you are and how full of sin. But God doesn't leave you there. Thank God. He also shows us his forgiveness of our sin. And then he asks us a question. Because believe it or not, y'all are going to be offended with one another. Believe it or not. And I hope God gives you the grace to ask one another to please forgive. But when you look at yourself, when God shows you you, and God shows you his forgiveness, and he will ask you, how can you not forgive? Because there are people that are here today that thought they could never ever forgive. How can I forgive after what they've done? How they've violated our marriage? If Christ forgave us of so much, how can we not forgive? Not forgive one another. And remember, it is God that enables you to forgive. Okay? So always remember, forgive one another. Always pray for one another. And something I read said, always remember why you married this person. Always remember what that was that so attracted you to them. Another thing you need to remember is that love is a choice, not a warm, fuzzy feeling. That's called an electric blanket. You proclaimed your love, or you will proclaim your love, your choice, before others on a wedding day. But the next day, the next year, the next 10 years, the next 20, the next 30, 40, 50, ever how many God gives you, you will make a choice to proclaim, to choose to love, to choose to continue to love. Because love is a choice. Love is not a feeling. The feelings will come, but you choose who you love. You need to learn to, with all that, you need to learn to laugh. You need to learn to laugh with each other and learn to laugh at yourself. Because you're going to do some stuff that's going to be, if you don't laugh, you're really going to get upset about it. So just laugh. And the last thing that I would say is spend more time planning, praying to stay married than you do planning and praying to get married.
Me. And the star of the simple quote, Brother Jim McQueen here. All right. Zip it up. All right. Well, thank the Lord. You know, I sent out an email and I gave these folks just some guidelines about this. And one of those guidelines was to keep it honest. However, I said keep it fun, then keep it honest. I figured it would be mostly fun and not quite so honest as it's been. I was surprised. You know, some of this has been wrenching, hadn't it? It just amazed me how honest you folks have been. It's been wrenching. And yet, I think these young people who've been sitting here, I don't think they'll forget this. as you folks have opened up and said what really the truth is about marriage. It is not a picnic, and we all know that it's not a picnic all the way through. And I just think this whole thing has been fascinating. Now, how do we finish a service like this? Well, first of all, we give people an opportunity to respond to what God has said to them as it comes. So, would you bow your heads for just a moment?